Welcome to the third installment of Monadnock Paper Mill's Masters of Design series. Today, we're talking to a true master of design, Joe Duffy. Joe is chairman of Duffy & Partners, known for its brand and identity work for companies like BMW, Coca-Cola, Sony, and Starbucks. Joe has served as a founding member of the Environmental Committee on the AIGA and has also earned its coveted Legacy Medal for Lifetime Achievement. He has served on the board of the One Club and is known as a pioneer combining branding and design with advertising. Last year, Joe was also named one of the 50 most influential people in Fast Company's Fast 50 list. Joe, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for coming.
First question, you founded Duffy & Partners to be a new kind of branding and creative company. What change did you see in the marketplace that you think the Duffy & Partners model addresses?
Well, there are a number of changes. I guess first and foremost, there is a much greater appreciation for design today than there was during any time previously, at least in my career. I think that was instrumental in kind of reformatting the company or repositioning the company. That coupled with the fact that I think branding has changed significantly in just the last 5 years or so because of the fact that the audience has much greater control over what kind of messaging they take in and what kind of brands they want to associate with. They have unbelievable choice today, primarily because of the internet, and they can access anything, anywhere, virtually. It really changes the importance and the dynamics of how brands become popular and how companies gain access to and an association with the audience out there at large.
As a firm that does quite a bit of packaging and print design, how important is eco-consciousness in your work?
Well, it's always been important to me. I served on the National AIGA board for a number of years and headed up their environmental division. And so way back when, this is like 15, 18 years ago, when recycled paper and soy-based inks were coming onto the market in their initial few years. So we were doing everything we could then to make sure that we were doing what was right for the environment. Now there's obviously much more choices and a lot more thinking that goes into that, and it's becoming even more important because there's more opportunities to really lessen the impact on the environment, and because we're all that much more concerned about it because of what's going on out there.
Do you generally propose a green approach to clients, or do they come to you looking for it now?
Most clients today make that part of the brief, I think that's a really good sign. If they don't, we always make it an important aspect of what we propose to them to make sure we're doing our part there.
So do you think eco is a trend, or is it here to stay?
No, it's here to stay. I think some people thought it was a trend when we first started getting involved in recycled paper and soy-based inks and whatnot, but it's obvious that it has had a critical effect, and people see the results of negligence towards the environment much more so today than back then. So it's certainly not a trend, because I don't see the problems with the environment going away anytime soon.
In looking at the process that you go through in designing a new identity or designing a brand, you speak of determining a brand's language. How do you determine a brand's language?
Well, when we say language, we say the complete range of dialogue with the audience. In other words, it's not just about what you see as a logo or what you see as a sign or the user interface on a website. It's literally every interface, every point of contact with the audience. And in order to create that in a way that is deep enough to really say all the things that a brand needs to say in its association with its audience, it requires literally a visual language. not just a trademark or not just a logotype, but a whole set, a whole range of icons that can speak in a uniformed way and yet in a broad enough way to you know, make that dialogue complete and true and interesting enough at every point of contact.
Yeah, I noticed when I walked in the door, there's a wall just as you come in that almost looks like a bed and bath store. It's all of the new Times.
Yes.
Each line has a different look to it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you determine what line gets what look, and how do you make it all hang together?
What we set out to do with Times was refresh the brand personality and maintain its relationship to the older end of the audience, which is women in their 30s, 40s, 50s, while at the same time make it appropriate and cool to the audience that they had kind of lost, and that being the younger women in their teens, 20s, and in their 30s as well, who looked upon the brand kind of as their mother's brand or even their grandmother's brand, because it, to them, it looked kind of boring and staid. And I think there are a number of brands out there that have been around as long as Times has, which is like 30 years, that have been incredibly successful, that really need some revitalization, because, you know, as the audience ages, you have to bring new people into it, and therefore you have to make it appropriate for today. And what we try to do in that case is maintain enough of the brand equity and familiarity while infusing some new life into it. And one of the ways to do that in our minds was to create an overall look for Times, which would signal kind of a family of brands. And then in revitalizing or creating new sub-brands or product lines under that, bring something fresh and kind of eclectic. And you can create character attributes along those lines, but it's like a family member in a regular family. It's everybody is their own personality, everyone is their own person, but you can kind of see a family resemblance.
Do you think it's more or less of a challenge to rebrand an existing product versus start from scratch with a new product?
Depends on the brand. I love a clean slate of paper and just being able to start from scratch, but I also love the challenge of taking what's good about something and breathing some new life into it. And I think we've probably become more well known for taking a brand like Ofresca or Times and making it appropriate for today. I love the parameters that are set by a positive equity in a brand and the way people associate with it, because you have something to start from and you have some, you know, positive momentum to work with. And I think there are so many great brands out there that just with some tweaking, or in some cases more than just tweaking, can be really popular because people love things that have stood the test of time, that have integrity, that is built up over time, and yet they want to make sure that it's appropriate for the way they live their lives today, which typically means that you have to take the old and jazz it up a bit with something new and exciting.
In preparing for the interview, I came across a lot of discussion from you and about the firm regarding the democratization of design. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Design is so much more popular today. It's not just for the artistically inclined or the well-to-do. It's for everyone. And everyone has the opportunity to get in on the fun, so to speak, because you can go to Target and you can buy really well-designed, inexpensive products for everyday use, whether it's a can opener or a light for the side of your bedstand or whatever. I mean, there was a time not that long ago when really beautifully designed products were extremely expensive. The Targets of the world and many other brands have realized that, you know, everyday products and things that people used to kind of give the back of the hand to are ways to help people enjoy the simple things in everyday life. So there's lots of choices out there. There's beautifully designed products for every aspect of your life. And we like to refer to it as being able to literally design your life because of what's going on out there today. And
what do you think is the hardest part of developing great design?
Oh, well, you know, I think the hardest part typically is selling a great design idea, because if it's great, it's something that people are not familiar with. The easiest thing to do is to replicate something that has been popular for whatever reason. And that, you know, that's not just design, that's entertainment and all aspects of design like fashion and everything else. We have too much Me Too, particularly in this country, I think. So the most challenging thing is to, first of all, come up with something that's fresh and totally new, and then secondly, to convince your client that this is the way to go, because it's not tried and true or tested. It's something that's never been done, and on the face of it, I'm sure seems considerably more risky.
What role do clients play in great design, then?
Well, we do something that scares the hell out of a lot of creative people, and that is we invite them into the creative process. We've been doing this for a long, long time, and it came from my frustration in trying to sell what I considered great design. And the big stumbling block then was that we'd work on a new idea that we thought was absolutely brilliant, and we felt because it was so brilliant, I'd be able to walk into a conference room like this and knock everyone off their chair. And too often, it came across as something that the client didn't understand or didn't like, and the reason was that they were surprised. The initial shock of presenting something that to them was totally out of the blue many times sent it south in a hurry. We devised a way to visualize the brief. Client gives us the brief, which sets out the goals that we want to achieve in this branding program. And we, like all designers, are great collectors of stuff, you know, visual imagery from everywhere, and books, and magazines, popular culture publications, and stock photo houses, you name it. We have libraries of, you know, visual stimuli that people look at when they're trying to come up with ideas. And what I have the design team do, in our, once we've established the verbal brief, is to begin to think about elements that will visualize this. And we'll sort through literally hundreds of images on a table like this and, you know, maybe get it down to 100. And then we'll invite the client in and see what their take is on these images and how it relates to their brand and what we're trying to achieve, and we'll mix and match and edit and focus down, and they become part of the creative process by helping to create a collage that we believe is the visual world that we will then work within in order to create the brand language.
How do you view a product's need to sell versus the need to build its brand?
To me, you can't really separate them. A product's reason for being is so much a part of what we call the expression of the brand, because it's what makes it unique and different and appropriate for the audience that it needs to attract. So what we try to build into the brand language is an expression of why it is what it is, why it is different from other brands that it competes with, so that what it does for you is the way it comes across and the way it's presented in communication, such as advertising, or in the way it presents itself, you know, when you're holding it in your hand via packaging or point of sale, the actual retail environment in which it sits. How can we do as much as we possibly can to give people a clear indication of what this product is going to do for you and how it's going to do it in order to make it that much more attractive to you and appropriate in your life?
In reviewing your process, I noticed one of the steps is to interrogate ideas.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was very interesting language. Yeah. How do you go about that? Is it a bare light bulb in a room with that over a stool? Or?
Yeah, sometimes it is, I guess. Design is this, I think, delicate balance between art and commerce. And I think the best design does the best possible job of selling a proposition and bringing people to it. But if it doesn't do so through its art, then I'm not really interested in it, because I think that's the beauty of design. It attracts people's attention, and it makes people love it because, you know, it's artistic. But then it has to do the heavy lifting as well, and make sure that it's selling that proposition. And when we talk about interrogating ideas, it's making sure that they strike that balance properly. And that if it looks beautiful, that's great. If it doesn't do its job on the other side and meet the client's objectives and meet the marketplace objectives, you know, the most beautiful thing in the world would probably be better off hanging in a museum as opposed to attached to a product that our clients want to sell.
Do you think design is over-focus grouped?
I think it is. I mean, we do qualitative research on many of the brands that we work on. And I think if it's done properly, we learn a lot from that process. But I think there's a tendency in this country, and I think it's getting better, to over-research ideas to the point where we end up with things that are familiar to people. Because a lot of the breakthrough ideas, because they haven't been out there and people aren't familiar with them, they don't win the day in a qualitative focus group. And it's because of that lack of familiarity or something that looks very foreign. And I think the best ideas are based in people's general understanding of how they are going to come across, and yet there's got to be something really new there. And so I think that research can kind of squeeze the life out of a great idea simply because it's not familiar enough, and that's what research tends to lean towards many times.
Can design alone break through the clutter out there?
I think it really can. I think, in fact, it's become the best way to break through the clutter, because design is about reaching people from different perspectives and at different intervals. Design can attract your eye and separate your brand from a crowd in a supermarket, let's say, in the cereal aisle where everybody's screaming for attention. Once it does that, it can then attract your interest that much more when you get closer up and realize that there's some ingredients or some information that you really want to find out about. When you pick it up, and you know, there might be tactile qualities or something that suggests that it is more precious or different or what have you. And so that's the level of communication that design offers. And then the experience itself, so often with so many different products, is in fact brought to you via design. It communicates on so many different levels. I think that it probably more than any other form of marketing communications has a chance to separate things out and make them more important and vital to you in your everyday life.
In a world of new media, do you think the package is becoming more or less important?
I think it's becoming more important. I think the ability of the package to literally touch the audience is more meaningful today than ever before, simply because so many people out there are, you know, kind of turned off by the impersonal nature of so much that's going on around them. So things that you can touch and interact with, like the package and the product itself, I think are more meaningful today than ever before. And obviously, companies all over the world are realizing that and putting that much more thought and funds into how that interaction takes place via packaging.
What do you look for in good packaging?
Well, I think it has to have the visual impact to draw people to it, in a sea of sameness or in a crowded, visually chaotic environment. And if you go into a supermarket or if you go into, you know, virtually any kind of store, there are so many brands that are vying for your attention. So I think separating the sea of chaos or sameness, so to speak, is the first thing that that has to be achieved. And that comes from fresh new ideas and kind of really studying what everybody else is doing so you can do it in a way that kind of separates you, your brand from the rest. What we try to do is design in elements that present themselves in such a way that you just absolutely have to pick it up and touch it and turn it around.
Do you think tactile quality is important in packaging?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's real important. Everybody, if you're attracted to a package, you're going to pick it up and how it feels, and not just, you know, at point of sale, but in your home and how you use it and the utilitarian aspects of it. You know, how well does it seal and how easy is it to use from a utilitarian point of view? How does it store? And, you know, in the best instances, is it something that you want to keep and reuse? Or would you give it another purpose because it's so beautiful you just can't put it in the recycling bin?
What would people who work for you say you obsess about?
Oh, that's a tough one. I guess what I've learned in this business, because I've been in it so long, is that you have to obsess over the details, and you constantly have to go back to the beginning and refresh your memory about why you're doing this in the first place. I think designers, I mean, all creative people, have a tendency to start somewhere and evolve to a point that may be pushed more by their own particular visual interests or aesthetics. And that's fine, but I think you have to keep bringing yourself back to, you know, why you started out to achieve this in the first place. So I think one of my most important jobs here as the creative leader is to make sure that we're doing things that are fresh and new and innovative, but we're always doing them with the initial objectives in mind. So I obsess about those.
What do you think makes great brands great?
I think, well, first of all, it's it starts with the product. I mean, it's got to be something great. I mean, if you look at Apple, if you looked at the Mini, if you look at you know, the great brands out there, they're all about great products. Look at the iPhone. I mean, that's a brand that is so phenomenal. I always tell people, I don't know why they advertise. I mean, what's the need? The product itself, the design thinking that has gone into making something that has revolutionized an entire product category is enough. The talk value that comes from Steve Jobs standing up there and just saying, look at how this thing looks and look at how, watch how it works, that's a great brand to me. It has to be there. Now, we can name it and create an identity for it and package it up in a beautiful way and project it out there to the world and interesting new through interesting new means, but you know, the product itself, and that's the beauty of design. It's involved at that stage as well as in the stage where we get involved, which is to take a great product and present it in a way that that is breakthrough as well.
The Masters of Design series is brought to you by Monadnock Paper Mills, who remind you that great work deserves great paper, Monadnock paper. And be sure to visit www.mpm.com for future installments of the Masters of Design series. I'm David Lennox, and on behalf of Monadnock Paper, I'd like to thank you for listening.